How's it going? And welcome to episode 31 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. Of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by the 2020 TGFBI champion, Kevin Hastings, who of course can and should be followed on the Twitter at HastingKevin. Make sure to follow up this episode by reading Kevin's weekly fab recommendation and preview article over at pitcherlist.com, which comes out every Sunday afternoon. Kevin, I hope your trip away was refreshing and gave you, extra energy to finish off the final month of the season.
Oh, it went great. Yeah, I'm glad to be back. However, you and Jordan were awesome. It is really different listening to this show, but it's really cool getting up on Sunday morning and checking out what happened the night before when I was gone. It was great.
I had a couple of those experiences earlier in the season as well. Yeah. And yeah, it's a different world. I listen to plenty of other podcasts besides our own, but it's a different opportunity to listen to your own podcast, especially when you're not on it. Which exactly. Is just, we are lucky enough to have somebody on the pod to help us out talking about like late season September Fab, who is no stranger to probably listening to her own podcast because she's on plenty right now. And that is Lauren Auerbach. She's going to help us figure out the best use of your final Fab dollars this weekend. Lauren can and should be followed on the Twitter at LK Auerbach. And can be heard co-hosting the Rest of Season Rankings podcast over at rosrankings.com and co-hosting the SB Streamer podcast alongside Michael Simeone, as well as writing regularly over at Fantrax. Lauren does a great job covering multiple sports, and I'm looking forward to talking a bit more about that later on in the show. But for now, Lauren, we're here to talk about baseball. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me, guys. I'm so excited to be here. I really enjoy the work that you guys have been doing throughout the season. And this is crunch time. This is down to the wire on the wire. And I think that nice we're
that's just like that.
There you go. Down to the wire, on the wire. But this is it. This is when it's like we're talking about matchups versus talent, and it's just like opportunity and how we can maximize categories. You guys do such a great job at it. And so I'm very happy to be here and help you guys with it this week.
Yeah, appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it. We've got a lot of players that we're going to talk about. Lauren was great and put a bunch of her notes ahead of time. So we get a little preview of who to expect. All right, so stick around till the end of the episode when we get to our recommendation section, of course. But for now, we are going to move right into our news and notes. Not a ton happening this past week, if I say so, at least not from me searching around. But Lauren, I'm going to start with you in Boston. Jaron Duran became the latest COVID casualty for the Red Sox as he was placed on the IL Friday, joining other Boston hitters, Xander Bogaerts, Christian Arroyo, Enrique Hernandez, and Yairo Munoz. My question isn't about the loss of Duran, because he was already sent down and came back up, but I'm curious to know your thoughts on if these losses in the Boston lineup do more to provide new opportunity for new players that we saw in the last week or so, or do you see it doing more harm to the current players like JD Martinez's or the Hunter Renfro's of the world, providing possibly less protection or more or less opportunity for counting stats? Like where do you land on that?
Yeah, I think the first answer to your question is yes, it does provide new opportunities for players. Duran, I think he's the ninth Red Sox player to land on the COVID list. They're one of the few teams that are under that 85% vaccination threshold. And so now it's almost like the team is paying a price at a very inopportune time. Now you've got people like Jonathan Arraiz I don't know if I'm saying that right, Arraiz, who will probably be seeing more playing time with Xander Bogaerts out, with Jaron Duran out. They brought up Connor Wong. Jack Lopez has made the roster since they expanded at the beginning of the month. You have pitchers like Connor Siebold and Cutter Crawford that are basically sitting on hold and ready to be called up if need be in terms of depth for their pitchers. But I think they definitely have, you have these opportunities available. We'll see how everyone adjusts. I think in terms of having harm to the regulars, so far the Red Sox have managed to stay afloat through all of this. Schwarber's really stepped up nicely, taking over the top of the lineup with Kiki Hernandez out, and they've managed to fend off Oakland so far. So I think that unless these guys with these new opportunities kind of fail, I think that the regulars are okay in terms of run production. And I think that's okay. But ultimately, if these guys do fail, Boston's going to have a hard time winning, and they are shooting themselves in the collective foot, if you will.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. And as a Red Sox fan, I'd rather not talk about it too much, but with the collective foot being hurting. But I'm not too worried personally about the Martinezes or the Schwarbers of the world right now, or the Renfros, who just obviously just came back from his bereavement leave as well. It obviously provides even more playing time for Renfro, who wasn't really seeing any kind of cut in playing time anyway. So, you know, something to keep an eye on. We talked about Arise. Yeah, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name either, unfortunately. So we're in the same boat. We talked about him last week as well, and I don't foresee him being a major piece in a fantasy free agency the remainder of the year, especially just being at the bottom of the lineup. All right, Kevin, from my team to yours, we'll go over to Kansas City, and you got your boy back. I don't know if it's your boy or not, but it's a guy. Alberto Mondesi did return to Kansas City, is already making an impact. Curious, not so much about if you're plugging Mondesi into your lineup, but I'm wondering whose time is he taking away in Kansas City? And of course, the most pressing question, is there still time and or space for Mr. Bobby Witt Jr. to make an appearance?
First question first, it's pretty easy who loses the most playing time. That will be Emmanuel Rivera. He's been playing third base.
I just assumed it was Oliveras. They didn't send Oliveras down yet?
Yeah.
Just wait.
Not yet. It's probably coming. But yeah, it's Rivera. Mondesi is going to DH some days, and he's going to have regularly scheduled days off. So he's not going to play every day. That's going to be really tough in NFBC formats when you get the first half and second half of the week, judging whether to even put him in your lineup. It's hard not to. First game back with a stolen base and a home run and a couple runs scored. It was crazy, but he's so far playing about every other day. They'll probably ramp that up a little bit, but regular scheduled days off and DH part of the games that he does play. So Rivera will miss the most time. It could also affect Ryan O'Hearn, maybe even Hunter Dozier, but the Royals were shuffling those guys around anyway. As far as Bobby Witt Jr. is concerned, I guess he's not ready. He hasn't hit a home run in a week. He's hit 360 with six extra base hits this past week, but none of them were home runs. He's not ready, or he's just working on defense.
I don't know. Well, hitting all those home runs wasn't doing it, so he had to change it up.
Yeah, even since his call up to AAA in 40 games, he's slashing 302, 355, 621, and on pace for nearly a 50 home run, 30 stolen base season.
That sounds good.
It's all right. It's all right. But my worry is we only got 4 weeks to go. The whole service time thing is going to come into play now. The Royals aren't in contention. They aren't going anywhere. Mondesi's going to play third base some days. That leaves Nicky Lopez at shortstop and Whit Merrifield at second. The best thing about this Mondesi return, by the way, going back to that, is that they are having him play third base. That's been my hope all season long once these injuries started to pile up. The question to me wasn't, where do we put Witt Jr.? The question was, where can we put Mondesi, try to keep him healthier? There was some talk about moving him to the outfield. I really like the idea of him moving to third base. That doesn't have anything to do with our fab going forward for the rest of this season. Unfortunately, I'm starting to think, in spite of how well he has performed at both levels this season, we're not going to see Witt Jr.
Something I've always been curious about, and I don't know if the answer to this, I was just did a quick Google. I should have done this before the show, but if I'm not mistaken, and Lauren, you chime in too, if you know the answer to this, please. During September, when the rosters used to expand to up to 40, right? If you called up a guy in September, it didn't necessarily go against their clock, if you will. Now with the rosters only expanding to 28, do those same rules apply to those two extra guys, or is the clock starting no matter what?
Yeah, good question.
That's not quite right, Adam. Because I was wondering about that. And so the September call-up didn't count against their rookie status the following season, but it still counted towards their service time.
That's good. That's the service time question was where I had my gray area.
Exactly. I thought the same thing. Why not call them up in September? But I looked it up.
So it's still the same then. It still wouldn't go against his rookie status being called up in September, even though the rosters are only got called up to 28 instead of 40. He could still win rookie of the year next year, which if the odds are in your favor, you should go place that bet right now. All right. Speaking of another rookie making his September appearance, Lauren, in Minnesota, Joe Ryan made his MLB debut for the Twins this week. With so many injuries, we talk about this way too much on this show, with the Minnesota pitching staff being so incredibly hurt. Do you see Ryan sticking in the rotation through the remainder of the season? And, you know, if so, how much of an impact do you see him making for fantasy rosters down the stretch, never mind the Twins?
Yeah, I do. I think in his debut against the Cubs, he went 5 innings. He had 3 hits, 3 earned runs, and that was primarily a product of Frank Schwindel, a home run. He had one walk and 5 Ks. So not too bad. I can see him sticking in the rotation. There's nothing for the Twins to lose, I think, in terms of continuing to throw him out there at this point in the season. I think he's worth a stash. He has the skills. So in terms of kind of relevancy for rosters down the stretch, I think he could be a good source of Ks in the minors across Tampa Bay and Minnesota. He had 92 strikeouts across 66 innings in AAA, and he can help you out with your ratios, especially in WHIP. Going back to his minors again, he's had pretty good command at all levels, and he's always finished the season with a sub 115 WHIP each season. I think that he can stick, and I think that he can, if he does stick, I think that he can help you in some of those categories. And I think, Adam, was it you, I think last week or a couple weeks ago when you had, I think Joe Ryan was one of your stashes? Was
About him and Siebold last week.
And Siebold,
Wild card. Yeah. I was pretty good to see him get the call up a couple of days after.
Yeah, so I think that they can stick. I know they just got Randy Dobnak back, but he didn't pitch too well on his first outing back with kind of a finger injury. But we'll see. Why wouldn't they continue to throw him out there?
Yeah, for all the reasons we talked about last week and what I alluded to just now with all the injuries we're seeing in Minnesota in their rotation, there's no reason not to. And it was nice to see that they made room for him on the 40-man roster and they called him up. We don't know how many innings he's actually thrown this year just because he played so much in Japan in the Olympics, and how much of those were quality innings or not. They're just different. They're just different. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure Minnesota wants to see as much out of him as possible going into next year.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin, we got Joe Ryan making his MLB debut, and now we have somebody else being sent down after being in the MLB probably too long. Victor Robles got demoted to AAA, and I'm curious to know what noticeable impact you find being made on the Nationals lineup with him, not just out of the leadoff spot, but just off the roster.
I'm not sure they know yet. Andrew Stevenson started in left field the second game of the doubleheader today after Yadiel Hernandez did the first. Josh Bell started in left field yesterday. Hernandez the day before, Bell the day before that, Hernandez before that. So Hernandez is getting the most time, 3 of the last 6 games. Not really what we're looking for this time of year for our fantasy rosters when we're trying to get all of the plate appearances we can scramble together. In a really deep league, he's the guy. He's going to be available in a lot of spots, and he's performed well over the past month. He's hit .274 with 5 home runs, double-digit RBI and runs scored. So he's the one if you're in a really deep league and need an outfielder. But in most of our leagues, they're shuffling these guys around too much.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see if he gets called back up before the end of the month, just because I don't know when the regular season ends, but I think it's soon. And Rochester, their AAA affiliate, is not looking like they're playoff bound in their division. There's not going to be a lot of time for him to play there. So I wouldn't be too surprised if they just pull him back up for the last 2 weeks of the season. Not that he'll be somebody that I want to jump on for the last 2 weeks of the season. When he does come back up, that would be the reason, because there's really nowhere else for him to play. All right, Lauren, over in Chicago, they lost a couple pieces, at least for the short term of their rotation. That's the White Sox put Lance Lynn and Lucas Giolito on the IL. You know, what impact do you see these moves making for Chicago's rotation, at least in the next week or two?
I think you're going to see more Reynaldo Lopez. I know that he pitched tonight. I'm not sure how well he's been doing, but he basically has been lights out for Chicago this whole season. He's primarily playing out of the bullpen, but he was the one that they called on when Carlos Rodon was out, and he pitched pretty well. And he started, I think, three games when Rodon was out. And during that time, he had a 1.93 ERA, a 0.64 whip, and 15 strikeouts in 14 innings. I think that he's someone who's definitely available in kind of 12 team leagues. I think that he is like 39% owned in Yahoo, or rostered in Yahoo. And he brings win potential. He brings some Ks. He's a really good ratio stabilizer. And so I think if he's out there, I think you definitely want to put a bid on him. And he also has a relief pitcher and starting pitcher eligibility. So that's nice. But they also did bring up Ryan Burr with Lucas Giolito going down. And he's been making some relief appearances for Chicago since the end of May. And he's okay. He has 20 Ks across 25.1 innings pitched. He's a ground ball pitcher. He does have some command issues though. He has a 13.7 walk rate on the season. So I don't know if they'll try and cobble some starts together with Burr or maybe Jose Ruiz or something. But I think if it ain't broke, why fix it? I think Lopez has worked well for them. He is scheduled, if they want to, if either Lynn or Giolito miss, I think they're both eligible to return at the end of the week, this upcoming week. And it looks like Lynn, I think, may only miss one start, but Giolito may be a little murky on his return. And so I think if Giolito does miss time, I think that it's an easy fill-in for Reynaldo Lopez.
Yeah, I think that's the easy choice as well. Lopez did pitch today, didn't look as well as he had been, to your point. Four innings, three earned runs, a walk, three hits, did allow just one home run. So not bad. Only one strikeout though, which, you know, you want to see a little bit more out of that, especially with the new eyes that he's got.
The going new eyes. On. Yep.
Yeah.
Not blurry anymore.
Right. We said the same thing about Tommy Pham a couple of years ago and made a big difference.
Yeah. So. I don't know. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think he'll be in the rotation. I think what I'm most interested, because I have a lot of shares of Dylan Cease, is any concern you had of Dylan Cease being slowed down, at least through the first part of September, go out the window with these two guys completely out of the rotation for a short period of time. Maybe they slow him down the final week or, you know, week and a half, just because he is hitting a career high in innings. And obviously they need and want him ready for the playoffs along with the rest of the rotation. But the White Sox also have a beautiful cushion on their division right now. They can afford this. They can afford to take as much time as they want with any player that they want. They can have Dodgeritis across the board, as we say, with pretty much anybody. I'm not worried about the situation personally.
Yeah.
All right, Kevin, we'll go over to Colorado. I've got a couple of choices for you to make. They lost two key pieces on their team, one in their rotation, Austin Gomber, who will miss the rest of the season with a back injury. And honestly, I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying to pronounce the full name of the injury, so you can look that up on your own. They also lost what has become a key piece to their lineup in Connor Joe, going down with the right hamstring strain on Friday. So I can say hamstring strain. That's not a problem.
And can you say it three times fast,
though? Oh, I won't know. I know my limitations. manager Bud Black didn't seem optimistic, at least with Joe coming back anytime soon, though he hasn't been officially put on the IL, I don't believe. So I'm curious to know your thoughts. Which of these missing pieces impacts Colorado's roster more, losing Gomber in the rotation or Joe giving up the leadoff spot in Denver?
For the Rockies, it's losing Gomber. Tapia just came back, so he's back to take Joe's spot. But for us, we're not interested in a lot of Rockies pitchers usually. We don't use pitchers in Coors Field. And The Rockies are two different teams this season, two completely different teams. They are within a game and a half of the best home record in baseball. That's the Dodgers. And the Giants and White Sox, I believe, have a half game better record than the Rockies have at home. On the road, the Rockies are 18 and 50. So when we would use a Rockies pitcher, their entire team is horrible. So I'm not interested in a guy that wasn't even a fifth starter for the Rockies 2 days ago. So for us, the thing is Tapia is back and maybe a few more at-bats for Garrett Hampson as well. I know a lot of people still like to see that, especially when he's probably going to lead off when he's in the lineup. Looks to me like him and Sam Hilliard are going to switch the center field duties, probably a platoon there. Hampson will get more time, but Tapia is back in the lineup as well. And in shallower leagues, he's available in about half of them. So take a look and see if Tapia is available. He's scoring a lot of runs this season, 62 runs scored with 19 stolen bases and hitting .280 in the process. So one of those guys, like you like to say, take a look, only takes a second. He's there.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tapia, obviously even though he's in Colorado, you're not picking him up for the power, which is pretty much non-existent. But that batting average doesn't hurt to chip away at the last couple of weeks. And he's going to chip in that speed as well. All right, Lauren, we started off with you. We're going to end it with you. And we're going to go over to New York as if the Mets needed anything else to happen. Brandon Nimmo left the first game of their doubleheader early with hamstring tightness. Kevin Pillar got the start in center field for the second game. And so do you see Pillar just being the main beneficiary of playing time if Nimmo misses any extra time, or is there anybody else you like here?
I think probably. I think he's the one kind of with the experience. I know they brought up Travis Blankenhorn. I think Albert Almora Jr. popped in a little bit, but both of those guys, I think that they have some plate approach issues, high strikeout, low walks. I don't think that they would really add much to the Mets. So I think that it is likely Kevin Pillar. And I don't know what you're chasing though, with even if it is Pillar, he's done okay, I guess this season, but it's the Mets. I just don't know what the upside is there. And I'm probably
like the way you said that. You're like, it's the Mets.
I don't want the Mets fan baits to come after me or anything, but I don't know. What do you guys think on this situation?
I think it'll be amazing if Pillar gives a thumbs down.
Yeah. He doesn't seem.
He was one of the three that were in on it.
Right? Oh, yeah, I guess was so.
He was one of the three that knew.
Oh, they knew. All right. Okay. It's like that guy in Yankee Stadium that the meme that everybody's been memeing for years now. That's the type of news that we don't typically cover because it's not going to affect your fab. Unless Javi Baez starts getting benched. I don't see that happening either.
Right.
No, I agree with everything you said, Lauren. That's what it looks like to me as well.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, well, that's going to wrap us up for our news section of the pod. As always, we try to keep it focused on news that might affect your fab considerations for this Sunday. We may have left out some important items worth knowing. To stay up to date with all those news and notes, you should be listening to the Daily First Pitch podcast hosted by Nick Pollock during the week. And of course, Alex Fast with Fast Pitch on the weekends. It's 15 minutes full of the most important things that happened in baseball the day before and is a must listen every day to stay up to date with what's going on across the league, including bullpen adjustments, big time hitting performances, and of course, starting pitching spotlights. So make sure you are listening to that as well. But for right now, like I talked about at the beginning of the show, we have Lauren here on the show, and Lauren does a fabulous job of covering multiple sports, specifically, at least at this time of year, football and baseball at the same time, at least between August and September. And I don't envy, I said this before we started recording, Lauren, I don't envy that. It's not something I'm interested in. I've done something I've been very proud of, and I've avoided fantasy football for
altogether.
Since 2012. Like
I feel like that's altogether.
Since 2000 through 2012, played every year in multiple leagues, and I just weaned it out. And I got sucked back in last year only because I'm in a three sport league. And of course, it includes fantasy football. But I have a co-manager there, Adam Slow. It's through PitcherList. Mm-hmm. And Adam, just do all of the football.
You're all football.
All the football is all yours. And he loves it. He's right. He gets the, and we won the championship. So
well, there you go.
There we go for that one.
Sounds like a winning equation there.
And then the league that I ended 2012 with was a dynasty league, and it just dismantled. And that got brought back up this year. So I had to do that league, which it is what it is. It's fine.
It's fine. They're fine.
But I have no interest in trying to act like I know what I'm talking about when it comes to fantasy football. And I will definitely be putting any and all fantasy effort, at least through September, into my fantasy baseball teams, probably to the detriment of these two football teams. So what I want to know from you is, you obviously don't do that. You obviously have enough capacity in your brain that I lack, or at least desire. That how do you do it? What are the things that like you prioritize when it comes, at least as we creep into August? Kevin talks about talking about this probably back in like July, as we start talking about, hey, this is the time of year where you can start gaining some ground because people start paying attention to football and they stop paying attention to baseball. You don't do that. So what is it that, what is part of your day-to-day? Like, how do you stop yourself from just forgetting about baseball and going right to football, and at the same, and also not letting baseball completely take over when you're going into football season?
Yeah, I think it's just, I love both sports. I will say, if I have to prioritize them, and my love is first, it's baseball, and then it's fantasy football, but I do correct enjoy answer. Both, you know, whew, pass the test. But yeah, I love both enough. And so in that sense, it's easy. But yeah, with my podcast partner, Andrew Seifter, over at Rest of Season Rankings podcast, we do rest of season rankings for both football and baseball. And we also do player notes for the majority of the players. And we write articles over there. And you can check that out at rosrankings.com. But really, it's because we had to prep for this that I probably started football earlier than I normally would if I was just playing. And we started this year in July. We both are a part of the Scott Fishbowl Fantasy Football League, and we've never been. So we were super excited, but that had an early draft in the beginning of July, and we just rolled with football from that point. But it is crazy because that's also, you're looking at the midpoint of baseball, and it is a little bit challenging to switch gears. So you can't do this big kind of cannonball dive into football. At least I couldn't. You go slowly, and then you are able to wrap your brain around both sports, if you will. And I think in terms of what do you do, it's best if you can try and keep on top of the news, you know, headlines of the day, injuries, roster moves for both sports. I will break up the day and say, do morning will be baseball stuff, afternoon to evening it will be football. And I always circle back and just check on headlines throughout the day. So staying informed, obviously, the more I think you are gaining knowledge, it becomes easier, and at least for me. And so in addition to that, I'm also looking at sources that I trust at this point, whether it's articles, websites, or podcasts that I trust and rely on in terms of information. And I think that's key. Once you figure that out, it becomes easier, but it can be a little overwhelming because I think that there is so much fantasy content out there. And I feel like it's just growing day by day, which I think is great in the grand scheme of things, but it is sometimes hard to swim through all of that. But I think to your point of you're riding with baseball through the end of September, that's what you should be doing. And that's actually a little bit of a cheat code. If you're following both fantasy baseball and fantasy football, now's the time when everyone's attention has turned over to football, is when you really take advantage of your baseball game. You constantly want to be churning your rosters and managing your rosters. And even if you're not in contention of prize, or you're not into the playoffs, you still want to be keeping daily track of your baseball lineup, because people will drop players that you wouldn't maybe expect would be dropped. And if you're in, say, a keeper league or a dynasty league, that stuff you can pick up when no one's paying attention, or you want to pick up guys who are doing really well at the end of the season in baseball as maybe a flyer for next season. So that's the time. Now is the time where you want to take advantage, if you're playing both sports, to strategy wise, to maximize your potential for your baseball leagues. But it's basically, short story long, basically information, staying on top of news, that becoming a habit for me throughout the day. And then it just becomes a little bit easier. And then I'm able to process it easier.
Yeah, it's absolutely true that players get dropped and just nobody picks them up. Mm-hmm. I have at least one league where, not that I was paying attention to other stuff, it's just one league I just didn't grab guys for a long time. So I'm like, all right, I got to clean up my roster.
Yeah.
Why is that guy available? Why is that guy available? Right. Why is that? And I realized it's like, all right, this is just that league that mm-hmm. people have either stopped paying attention to, or they just didn't prioritize. You're going to have those situations for sure. Kevin, I know you were supposed to have a big draft, a football draft recently. Did you still end up doing one like it, or did you fill it with other football leagues?
We still had the draft, just did not gather in Las Vegas. But yeah, it was a good time. I think, at least for me, and like Lauren said, a couple resources you trust and use their information. But for me, I don't feel I need to spend as much time on football as baseball. Mm-hmm. People get upset when you say fantasy baseball is chess and fantasy football is checkers. they get all bent out of shape. But that's not to say it's easier to win. It's easier to play. Mm-hmm. You still have to beat the same amount of people at the play in the same game you are. It's not easier to win fantasy football.
Right.
It's easier game to play. So for me, it doesn't take me a whole lot of time to prepare, I don't feel. And I've been successful. I used to play as much fantasy football as I did fantasy baseball. Started cutting it way down, got all the way down to one league for a couple of years. And now I'm back up to four this season. And I feel pretty comfortable. All four drafts are completed and I feel like I'm going to be fine. But I didn't take 1 minute away from my baseball time. It was making more time for the football.
Yeah. And I actually think that's a good point. Andrew and I talk about this a lot, where with baseball it's very stat driven and you can get in the weeds on stats. Whatever, you can find something that is interesting to you, like you can just dive in and you can go down a rabbit hole for like baseball stats. And it's not to say that there aren't stats in football, there are, but it's more kind of a situational game where it's very much opportunity. Opportunity is king. It's like next man up. It's how does a team context, like what is a team context? Is it a run first team? Is it a pass first team? And it's an easy, I feel weird saying it's easier, but it is, I'll use it for just a better lack
less,
of a term.
There's less variables.
Yeah, I guess so. And it's just, whereas I think with baseball, you have a player who has a certain hit tool and tool set. And no matter what team that player is on, he's still going to have that set. And that will either be the sky's the limit for him or it will handicap him. But with football, you can have skills, but depending on the team context or just opportunity, you can just be like, boom, like you're the fill-in and you could be like a star. It's just, I don't know. It's different. I don't know how to.
It's also the fact that in football, you're playing one team plays one team mm-hmm. each week. And yeah. In baseball, at the very least, you're playing two different teams. As a hitter, you're facing up to seven different starting pitchers. Between handedness and repertoire and just longevity and all these other variables, there's mm-hmm. a lot more that goes into that opportunity and the strategy that you're talking about with football. If it's a run heavy offense against mm-hmm. a defense that doesn't typically stop the run, green light. I oversimplified that. I totally get that. But there are a lot more variables. And there's a lot to Kevin, to your point, I agree. There's a lot more time to be used in baseball, at least when it comes to analyzing your free agent options, how to set your, how many times you're going to have to set your lineup throughout the week. If you're in a daily moves league versus weekly moves, even NFBC, you're still switching out your hitters at least midweek. So yeah, that's what I would probably struggle with, is going from baseball into football season, having a baseball mentality of being not a tinkerer per se, but like somebody that has to like, mm-hmm. all right, to what you said, Lauren, is like going down those wormholes and like mm-hmm. trying to figure out all the little intricacies and then carrying that over into football and then realizing maybe too late, I don't necessarily have to spend mm-hmm. that kind of time or effort. And so I just choose not to spend any time or effort on
that's
it.
That's so. Fair. I would say that's though, like why it does make it a little bit easier going from the baseball to the football, because it's almost like you're downshifting a little
right.
bit. So Yeah. I like it, but it helps that I like to play both sports. They're a little bit apples and oranges, but that's what I love. I love the variance there.
Yeah, if anybody is making the transition over to football, should definitely be listening to Lauren over at the Rest of Season podcast. And of course, be checking out QB List, our sister site over at our Pitcher List sister site, QB List, with Eric Smith running the show over there. Nick Pollock did a great podcast on Nick and Friends that came out on Wednesday with Eric. So getting to know him and what he does over at QB List is must listen, especially if you are making that transition into football. So make sure you're listening to both those pods, getting whatever advice that you trust, like we talked about, and making that transition smoothly and properly, and not just letting your baseball leagues go down with the ship if it were. Yeah.
Still pay attention to your baseball leagues.
Unless you're in my league, feel free, jump ship. No,
fall asleep. Yeah.
All right. Let's stick with baseball. Let's get into our recommendations for this week. There's only, I think, four more fab periods left in the year, all in September. Nobody has any money left. So let's find some cheap options for everybody to keep an eye out for. Kevin, we'll start with our power as we tend to do. Who are you looking at this week to add in a couple of home runs, maybe some RBIs for the stretch run?
Because of exactly what you just said, like, not many of us have very much money left. We have to stretch it to the end of the season in case we have any injuries. So I have several power guys. Some of them aren't available at all in 15-team leagues. Patrick Wisdom, he's universally rostered in TGFBI. Frank Schwindel is 85% rostered in TGFBI. Let's make it a trio of Cubs. Ian Happ, 100% rostered in TGFBI. But all of these guys are available to varying degrees in shallower leagues. Ian Happ, probably the most rostered of the three, he is. Swindell, less than half of Yahoo leagues he's rostered in. He's hitting 346 with five home runs in the past couple of weeks. Ian Happ is hitting 354 the past couple of weeks with four home runs. I knew this. You wrote about him for the batter's box.
Just a couple sucked of you back ago, in.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Brandon Belt, 100% rostered in TGFBI, but only 29% in Yahoo. Getting some other positions here. Lorenzo Cain is actually available in a couple of 15-team leagues, but only 23% rostered in Yahoo. Outfielders, we know their ownership or rostership percentages are going to be lower. We've talked about that a few times throughout the season. Deeper leagues, Yoshi Tsutsugo. He's only 17% rostered TGFBI, and he's got five home runs the past couple of weeks. The only five he's hit all season have all come in the past couple of weeks.
Hey, change of scenery for the third time. Yeah.
DJ Peters of the Rangers. Now, this is one, if you have to be set in batting average, because he's even worse than Joey Gallo, who he's taken over for. He's hitting 188 on the season, 224 over the past couple of weeks with four home runs, nine RBIs, seven runs scored. So what I'm getting at is we're going to have a lot of backup bids for this time of year. We need some power. Pick the guys that you want, put them in order in the order that they're available. First of all, make sure they're available. Second of all, put them in the order that you would like them and make a nice long list. If you need home runs right now to pass a couple of people, then this is what you got to do. You have to get a replacement, regardless of how far down your list you have to go, is kind of my point with listing all these guys.
Yeah, that's a strategy that works all season long, but even more so toward the end of the year when you just don't have any money. All right, Lauren, who is there anybody else that stands out off of Kevin's long list of contingency plans that you've noticed you might be taking a look at this weekend?
Kevin had a very good list. I like your power list, Kevin. I will add to it a deeper league. Edmundo Sosa in St. Louis. He's taken over the shortstop duties with Paul DeJong, really struggling lately. And he's moved up to seventh in the batting order. It's not necessarily ideal, but I he may move up more. I don't know. But in those past 11 games, since he's moved up the order, he has 2 home runs, 9 RBI, and in those 11 games, he's slashing 406, 512, and 781 in that span. And he has seven games coming up this week. So there is some more opportunity for him to rake, I think, this week. And he's only available in 5% of Yahoo League. So he could be there, and I think he's worth putting a bid on.
All great names, guys. Thank you very much. Let's move out of the power category and into some speed options out there. Lauren, you got your eye on a couple players that I noticed on here, so I'm going to let you continue and let me know of the players you got on here. Like, what? Let me know what order you would end up putting them in, regardless of availability.
Sure. So I've got 3 guys here. I have Lane Thomas of the Nationals. He's become their leadoff hitter. I think that he could be a sneaky source of runs. He's rostered in 33% of main event, 12% TGFBI, and 1% in Yahoo. So he's out there. And in his last 12 games, he has 13 hits, 5 doubles, 7 runs, 5 RBI, and a .277 batting average. He also has knocked in a home run and has 1 stolen base. He's got solid plate discipline too, which is nice. He has a 15.6% walk rate in 48 games. He's also another guy who has a 7-game week this week. So I like him. Dubel Herrera is another guy that I like, but I think that maybe he's a little bit better for daily leagues. He's been leading off when he's been starting. And in the past 11 games, he's contributed a little bit across the board. 3 home runs, 7 runs, 7 RBI, and 1 stolen base with .385 batting average. So he'll help you with that batting average. He'll contribute a little bit. But like I said, in these past 11 games, in 4 of those, he's been a pinch hitter. So you want to check to make sure that he's actually starting. And Leody Taveras, if you need steals and you only need steals, this is your guy. It's an empty steal guy. It's an empty rabbit here, where he's available in 12% main event, 7% TGFBI, and 10% Yahoo. And he was called up. It's like he started the season. He was quickly sent down to AAA, but he was just called back up on August 24th. And in that time, he has 5 stolen bases in 9 games. And like I said, you'll only get steals, and those steals will come at the expense of batting average. So you need to assess that. Texas likes to run, but he's sitting at the bottom of the order. I think that if he's able to get on base, he can run. I feel like if you're in Texas and you get on base, you can absolutely have the opportunity to run. I think they'll just let you go. I guess I would probably, if I needed steals and only steals, then I would do Taveras. I like Lane Thomas, like I said, as a sneaky run source, a sneaky source of runs. And the only reason I would put Herrera kind of on the back end of that is just in terms of, I'm not sure that he's going to be getting everyday playing time.
Yeah, Leody pretty much did the same thing last year, coming up on August 24th for the Rangers, stealing 8 bases between his call-up and the end of the season, and probably helping people move up the stolen base category in their standings for sure. And he could definitely do the same thing. To your point, did come with a .227 average in that 5-week period. But yeah, that stolen bases, if you're in the middle of the pack in stolen bases or even in 6 saves in your league, usually there's you can go from, like, in the category, you can go from 9th to 3rd pretty quickly if you find the right pieces to jump in. If you're at the very bottom or the very top, not as much wiggle room, but usually those categories are very tight in the middle. And Lane Thomas, everybody should have seen this coming. He's a former Cardinals outfielder moving to a new team.
He's going to be golden.
He's going to be gold. That's how yep. it works. That's just science.
Yep.
Kevin, any other speedsters out there off this list that you might be looking at?
We talked about him earlier. Not going to be available in 15 teamers, but first place I'm going to look is for Raimel Tapia if he's there in a shallower league. And then a lot of guys we've been talking about all season, Nicky Lopez, Jorge Mateo, we've talked about the last 2 or 3 weeks if he's out there. And Lauren said, and you talked about as well, if there is a bunch in the middle, mid-pack, where just a few stolen mm-hmm. bases can get you a lot of points, and you're good in the other counting categories and don't want to have to worry about your batting average, pick up Jerod Dyson and throw him in there. He's going to come in as a pinch runner and defensive replacement late in the game. He's got 8 at-bats and 2 stolen bases over the last few days for Toronto, and he's not going to hurt your batting average at all because he doesn't even hit.
They don't give him a chance. Yeah. Right. That's a valid point. It's like Adam Ottavino getting blown up in 2.2 innings, a 10 ERA in 2.2 innings. Actually, it's not that bad. It's a drop in the bucket when it comes down. If it was a 10 ERA in 10 innings, that makes a bigger difference. Mm-hmm. All right, we'll move on to some guys that have a good opportunity. Before I do that, I'm going to go over some scheduling notes for the week ahead. Just to keep an eye on players that you're looking at that might be on one of these teams, and it might affect the number of bats they get, the pitching schedule. So there are a few teams that have a 7-game slate for this coming week. Two teams actually have 8 games. So that's Baltimore and Toronto. They have a doubleheader on Saturday and a full slate of games. So they have 8 games. The teams with 7 are the Yankees, Cleveland, Kansas City, Minnesota, the Mets, Philadelphia, Washington, St. Louis, Colorado, and the Dodgers. They all have a 7-game slate. So plenty of at-bats available there. And plenty of 2-start options for those teams as well. San Diego and Arizona only have 5 games ahead of themselves this coming week. So keep an eye on that, especially hitters in the first half of your NFBC weeks. Colorado splits their time away and home. They are home for the first 3 games against San Francisco. And then they head out of town for a 4-game series in Philadelphia. And just also long-term, just keep an eye out. The Yankees don't have a day off until Thursday, September 23rd. One of only 2 more days off that they have for the remainder of the entire season, thanks to a makeup game against the Twins next week. They have plenty of opportunities to get even more at-bats, especially in your head-to-head playoffs league. So keep an eye on that. A lot of days you're not going to miss out on a hitter in your lineup. 2 NL teams go to the AL, so they will gain the extra DH in their lineup, and that is Arizona plays 3 against in Seattle over the weekend, while Milwaukee travels to Cleveland for a weekend series of 3 as well. But there are 4 AL teams that lose their DH and their pitcher will have to bat, unfortunately. Again, topic for a new pod. Texas has 2 in Arizona at the start of their week. The Angels have 2 in San Diego to start. Detroit have 3 in Pittsburgh Monday through Wednesday. And then the Yankees do play 3 at the Mets in their Subway Series over the weekend. So things to keep an eye on, whether or not the Yankees lose Stanton for a day or two in that series or any of their other DH typical hitters, and then all the other teams. So with all that in mind, Lauren, who might you be looking at who looks like they have a good opportunity ahead of themselves, whether it be the pitchers that they're facing, the teams that they're facing, the environment that they're going to be in, the number of games, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Who are you looking at in that category? All right. With all that information about the schedule and what have you, Lauren, what hitters are out there that you're looking at that looks like they have either good pitching matchups, handedness, they're walking into a good opportunity in general that maybe they don't fit specifically in the power or speed categories?
Yeah, I think I really like Josh Harrison. He's recently moved to the leadoff spot, and in his 6 games at the top of the order, he has 10 hits, 4 runs, 2 RBI, 1 stolen base, and a .370 batting average. He's batting the leadoff. He has positional flexibility. He has 6 games this week, 4 of which are against lefties, and he has a .314 career batting average against lefties. He's also good for batting average, and if you're in OBP league, he has a .363 on the season. So I like him. I also like Nick Solak. I had high hopes about Nick Solak early on this season, and
you're not the only one.
Yeah, I was just like, oh man, Nick. Anyway, he sent down to AAA. He was called back up, and he's been playing for 11 games. In that time, he has an 11-game hitting streak where he has 17 hits, 2 home runs, 7 runs, 8 RBI, and 1 stolen base, and a .395 average. And he has a 1.052 OPS in that time. He's batting 6th in the order. He has positional flexibility. And I am keeping my fingers crossed that he can just finish the season strong. And I'm sure he would love to finish the season strong as well. But I like him, and hopefully he can continue on with this. And you guys have said you've talked about Jorge Mateo a lot. I think he's been great since he was acquired by Baltimore at the beginning of August. He did miss the past about three games with hip and back issues, but since he's returned, he's played well. And he doesn't walk a ton, but he also won't cost you too much, I think, in the batting average department. He has 247 career average. He's got eight games this week, which is great, and positional flexibility. And so I think for that kind of, he's got plus opportunity this week. So I think that he's also worth considering putting a bid on.
Yeah, I love Mateo. I've liked Mateo for a long time, and I picked him up the last couple of weeks. And I'm really upset. I'm only upset about it, Tim, because I picked you up for one reason, and that's your 80 grade speed to get me some stolen bases. Yeah. And you got me more home runs in that time that you've been on my roster than stolen bases, which fine. I'm okay mm-hmm. with it, but I didn't sign you for that reason.
It's not what I needed you for. I know. And yeah. I don't think you should count on power for him. It was just like those just came out. So don't expect more than that.
Yeah. Chip in speed for some guys. Yeah. These are chip in bombs. They're just not something that I'm expecting. Yeah, Solak's another guy just help suck you back in. And you talked about having
the
flexibility on different positions. It was weird because I think he in some formats he came into the season as DH only, and he had to gain that eligibility. Maybe that was last year, but I'm pretty sure it was this year. And he just hasn't played a ton of games this year in general anywhere besides second base. So he's going to, I think next year he's going to lose some of that eligibility. He's played some outfield as well last year, but unless you're in a format that carries over multiple seasons worth of position playing time, which shouldn't happen next year with this was an elongated season. A lot of formats I know carried over positions from 2019 this year. It looks like he'll probably be second base only in 2022, at least to start 2022.
Okay. Yeah. And it's like Yahoo where they'll count anything under the sun. He's got, I think he's eligible for both second, third and outfield in Yahoo leagues.
Yeah. For this, the remainder of this season. And if you ask nicely, they'll just Yahoo. Yeah, sure. That's right. You can have whatever eligibility you want. Can I do this?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah.
All right, Kevin, any other opportunities ahead for next week for hitters that you're taking a look at?
Yeah. I want some of these eight games that the Orioles have at home this week as well. And he's universally rostered in TGFBI, but on Yahoo and in many shallower leagues, Anthony Santander, he's only 30% rostered on Yahoo, and eight home games at Camden Yards. And he's swinging a hot bat recently. He got the day off today facing a lefty. He doesn't always sit about against lefties. In fact, he has played the last four games that Baltimore has faced a left-handed starter, and he's hitting over 300 over the past couple of weeks with four home runs, and he's a nice source of power. I think I could have used him then, but the eight games that they have at Camden this week, it makes it more of a opportunity play than a power play for me.
Right. Yeah, I'll throw out one more name as well. It's more of an opportunity that we've seen recently, and that's Darren Ruff in San Francisco. He's led off the three of the last four games for the Giants. His playing time throughout the most of the year has been spotty, more of a platoon. He is a righty, so he would get the short end of that stick in those situations. But it doesn't seem to be a problem moving forward, at least the majority of the time. Three of those last 4 days at the leadoff spot, two against lefties, and one there was a righty thrown in there as well. We did start the fourth of those 4 days, I think, in the four hole. And he's going into Colorado, as the rest of the Giants are, to start the week next week. That's always good. He should face at least one lefty to start the week there. So at least one guaranteed opportunity in Denver is always nice. And since August 1st, he's hitting 311, 440, 508 with a 58.5% hard hit rate through 75 appearances. You say it's just 75 appearances because he's had some spotty playing time, but I think that's a large enough sample to know that that hard hit rate is going to play. And it's probably the reason, one of the reasons he's starting to see a little bit extra playing time, you know, and he's quietly, even with the spotty playing time, he's been quietly really well, really good all season with a 154 WRC plus, which if you're in a fantasy league that uses WRC plus as a stat, cool. I doubt you are if you're listening to this, but it's still a good representation of just how good a player has been playing, at least compared to the field. He's available in both corner outfield spots, if you break it down that granularly, for position eligibility, and first base on most formats as well. He filled in there for a good chunk of time for the Giants. Darren Ruff, available in a whole lot of places. He's about 42% rostered in the main event. So that's 15 teamers, going to be readily available in your 12 teamers as well. So good opportunity ahead of himself for this coming week, especially going into Colorado. All right, now we will move into our pitching categories. I'm going to start again with you. We're going to start with our wins and Ks. These are our pitchers that probably have, they could have two starts ahead of themselves this week. They could come in and vulture a win as a follower in a good situation. They might just have a good single matchup coming up that are going to rack up the counting stats in your pitching categories. So who do you like moving forward for this week in to get you some wins and Ks?
Yeah, I like Bailey Ober. I think that he's really been playing well, and it's especially in his last five starts. He has a 2.30 ERA and 1.10 WHIP, and that is with a 3.49 FIP. So that's still good. And he gives you about a strikeout an inning. He's really great with command, and he's been pitching in at least, or I guess he's had at least five innings pitched in all of his starts. So I like him. I also think Aaron Ashby is an interesting pickup. He has a date with the Phillies this week. And then in his last outing, he went five innings pitched, three hits, two earned runs, one home run, one walk, and 4K. He has some command issues, but he is good at limiting home runs. In Triple A, he had a 14.21K per nine. So there is, I think, some strikeout upside. I think he's a good arm to invest in, whether he makes starts or not, because I think that he can be used as a follower and they can just plug him in. And I think that with Milwaukee, he will get some win potential. He has some win potential. So I think that even as a follower, that works. And I think that he's interesting. I think that he's someone that next year I think you'll start seeing him jump up the ranks next year. And I actually realized that I misspoke about Ashby. He won't be playing on Monday. But like I said, I think I trust him enough to go up against whoever he's going up against as a fill-in arm.
Yeah, I think that you can guarantee that he's going to be out on the mound at some point. You're probably not going to see that little baseball icon or the little green star, mm-hmm. whatever you're using on whatever format you're playing on, as far as like when he's going to start. So you just got to throw him out there and hope for the best, which I have confidence he will continue, especially if you listen to last week's episode. The Aaron Ashby love is real, and it's not.
And I think it's only building.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I can't believe that 4% rostered in Yahoo, still 5% in TGFBI. Keep an eye on for that one as well. All right, Kevin, who are you looking at to rack up those counting stats for your pitching categories?
Yeah, a couple. For one start this week, and then probably dropping. I like Luke Weaver this week. He gets the Texas Rangers at home this week. In his first start since May 16th, he came back and threw six innings with only four hits, no walks, only three Ks, and the only earned run he gave up was a Trent Grisham home run when he faced the Padres. So I really like him facing the Texas Rangers at home. Unfortunately, he'll line up for two starts the following week, it looks like, at the Dodgers and at the Astros. So at the very least, he'll be on my bench, if not dropping him right away. But I do Luke Weaver for this week. I thought about saving him for ratios with only having those three strikeouts. However, most of the rest of season projections do project him for about a strikeout an inning the rest of the way. So I will go ahead and like him for wins and Ks facing the Rangers. And another one, this contradicts something I said earlier about Colorado pitching, but Kyle Freeland's been pitching pretty well. And we've seen this before where he did well at Coors as well a few years ago. Before Marquez came along, Freeland had a really good season in Coors. Now he's been pitching well this season at home and on the road. He gets two starts this week, and one of them at home, one of them away. And I think that if I need wins and I need strikeouts, so I need some volume, I think I trust Kyle Freeland this week.
Those are strong words.
I said, I think.
Yeah, thank you. Did reference that. I will give nothing more than a shout out again to Bryce Wilson, who looks like he's getting his start pushed back to next week. I called him out last week thinking he was going to get his two start against the two Chicago teams this week, but it looks like Will Crow is going to go on Sunday instead. Hopefully that lines up. They haven't announced it, but it allows Wilson to start on Monday against Detroit, and then he would line up against the Nationals at the end of the week. Somebody to look at with those good matchups. He performed well prior to the White Sox, and he didn't perform necessarily that poorly against the White Sox. They're just the White Sox compared to who he had been pitching and who he's going to be seeing moving forward. All right, we talked about some two-start pitchers for this week. Let's go ahead a week and look at a couple of possibilities for the week after. And I've got a list in front of me that you guys should have in front of you as well, of guys who might look like they're going to start the week of September 13th and get two starts. So these are only pitchers who are rostered in 50% or less Yahoo leagues. And I get this list from both Yahoo, and also make sure you're checking out Justin Wick's SP Futures schedule over at Pitcher List for a breakdown of all the best and worst upcoming schedules as he predicts it 2 weeks in advance. So Kevin, I'm going to start with you again. As always, pick a name that you like and pick a name that you're fading that you think the field might be looking at.
Just based on matchups and because it's not too bad this week either. I like Jake Odorizzi getting Seattle at home this week, and then at Texas, who I mentioned earlier, and versus Arizona. That's three nice matchups. And with Odorizzi back in that Houston rotation, I think that's where I'd be looking.
I do worry about Houston only because I believe they did announce that they were probably going to go to a six-man rotation with Urquidy back in the lineup, but with Greinke out on the COVID IL. Not sure how long he will be out. I'm assuming that they will stick with the five-man until Greinke comes back into the fold. I like the Odorizzi call-out a lot as well. I'm hoping he does get both the Texas and the Arizona. He is slated to start on Tuesday of that week, I believe, against Texas. So, if there's anybody that's going to get a pushback, it would probably in that rotation, it would be him. I'm just glad that he'll probably keep the rotation spot and not get pushed into the bullpen.
And it's funny, from this list, my fade would be Luke Weaver, even though I just said I'd pick him up for this week. But for this list, my fade is Luke Weaver.
You said that. Yeah, you said that at the beginning. The Dodgers and Matt Houston. He's terrible. Why would you ever pick him up? All right, Lauren, who do you like in this list and who don't you like?
I also had Jake Odorizzi as my number one, but I also have, and I don't really love this, but I also have Rich Hill in there where it's more of a schedule base versus talent. I guess that's not right. But again, I'm totally down on the Mets tonight and I feel bad. I don't know why, but no, I do like his schedule. He's going against Miami at Miami and then versus Seattle. And in his last five starts, he's actually been pretty solid. He has a 3.25 ERA and a 1.19 WHIP. And that's with a 3.89 FIP. So it looks like that's he can roll with that. He has 23 strikeouts and 27.2 innings pitched. He's pretty good at limiting home runs. Maybe there's some win upside. I don't know. But I do Odorizzi and Hill best off of this list.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Hill is that so he's at 133 innings so far this season heading into this upcoming week. And the most innings he's ever touched is 195 innings. But that was in 2007 with the Cubs. If anybody's not aware, Rich Hill is older than me. And
that's before you quit your fantasy football.
It is. Yeah. That's how you can tell. That's how we measure age here. Now, he had 135 and two thirds in 2017 with the Dodgers, followed up with 132.2 the following year in 2018. Hasn't crossed that mark in a long time. And so it's something to keep an eye on. We always think about younger guys and the rookies and the younger pitchers hitting that, you know, threshold, hitting that wall, if you will, getting over that mark and being shut down. I'm not saying that's going to shut Rich Hill down. That's silly, but that's not to say that a 41-year-old pitcher who has a history of injury and hasn't hit that wall in a long time won't be more susceptible to maybe not going as deep into games or just being tired. So keep an eye on how he performs in the next two or three starts, I think. All right, we'll move away from our wins and Ks and our two start pitchers and into our ratios category. Typically, we get a lot of recommendations on long relievers with opportunity ahead of them, or maybe it's just a new guy who has a lot of control and maybe not as much strikeout upside. But regardless, these are players that we're looking at that can chip away at your ratios, your ERA, your WHIP, and maybe you're not worried about your Ks and your wins too much. Maybe they chip in those categories, but that's not why you picked them up. Lauren, I'll start with you. Who are you looking at that can help chip away at those ratio categories in the final, at least this week, if not the rest of the month?
Yeah, I spoke about him a little bit at the top of the show, and that's Reynaldo Lopez. I think that he has an opportunity to start this week, and if he doesn't, he's been lights out of the bullpen, and he's just been really great since they called him up after the All-Star break. Like we said, I don't know, maybe it's the eyes. He has less blurry vision. I'm not really going to question it, but he's really good. He's really good ratio stabilizer. And he operates well with a fast slider combo. They have a 140 and a 225 batting average against them, with a 197 and a 214 expected batting average against them. And neither of those pitches is getting that hard either. You know, I like him. I like him more if maybe he's filling in this week, so he gets a little bit more volume. But if he doesn't, he's still going to be great out of the pen.
Yeah, and as we talked about top of the show, he's probably going to fill in a start at least this week. And again, the White Sox have a big cushion. So they're gonna have the ability to rest their guys, and Lopez is that guy that can definitely give that opportunity to their current rotation down the stretch. Kevin, who's chipping away at your ratios this coming week?
I like a guy we've talked about in the past, but we were hoping he was going to be a starter, and that's Dalton Jeffries in Oakland. Their bullpen has been a mess, and including today, this most recent call up here, he's thrown five scoreless innings, or no earned runs, I should say, in multiple innings today, excuse me. And if that's the way they're going to use him, then he's perfect for this spot. He's available everywhere because he was dropped when it didn't work out for him to be in the starting rotation. Another guy that will only work in daily change leagues is for similar reasons and different as well. Phillips Valdez in Boston has been really good these two appearances he's made since he's called up. Now, when Barnes and the others are back, he's probably going right back down, but he's been very well the last two outings, with the rest of the bullpen in Boston not performing very well. So he's getting multiple innings. But when we don't know with these COVID IL guys exactly when they're coming back, you can't put him in a weekly lineup.
No, beyond maybe an AL only situation, which you'll put anybody with the breath that can put that in your lineups or in your pitching spots. All right. Again, we talked about a couple of relievers, or at least one true reliever. Let's stick with relievers as much as it pains us to do so, and talk about some save opportunities. Kevin, I'll let you take the Band-Aid off of this first, because I know nobody wants to actually talk about this. If you don't want to listen to this, you can probably hit that forward 30-second forward thing maybe once or twice to see how long this takes. But is there anything out there worth looking at? Honestly, I'll throw out one. The situation that I'm avoiding, that I'm not avoiding because I have a lot of Alex Reyes on a lot of my rosters. I'm avoiding putting him into my active line of roster and putting him on my reserve or on my bench. But the St. Louis bullpen right now is completely up for grabs between pretty much anybody that can show any kind of resemblance of a closer situation. Keep an eye on that situation, I say, but I'm not sure that it's worth spending more than a dollar on any one guy from that bullpen, just because it's all going to be based on matchups from what they say. Is there anything else that you're noticing?
I'm going to go right back to Boston, and Todd Zola tweeted about this a couple of days ago, but I've held on to Hansel Robles in a couple of spots, and he does have the one save. I don't think he'll ever have the regular job, but with the whole situation going on there, if I really need saves and he's available, I might grab him. And on the teams where I do have him, he might be in my lineup this week.
Yeah.
And at least he's going to pitch and not get sent down like Phillips Valdez will.
Right. That's very true. So there's some safety in that. I think Robles did get his one save. He did get came in like a one out appearance in extra innings, if I'm not mistaken. So it's very situational. I personally don't trust Hansel Robles. I know you picked him up when he was still in Minnesota and it was a nice little stash and it worked out for 2 weeks. And I'm happy to hear that you found a way to hold on to him for so long. This shows loyalty. But yeah, that situation is completely up for grabs. I think Whitlock got a save. Ottavino obviously got a save. Garrett Richards got a 3-inning save, which is always fun to see. So who's to say what's going to happen next in Boston?
I think Ottavino got a blown save in the win today.
He got a lot of decisions. Not all good. Any situations out there, Lauren, that you've got a pulse on?
This was tough, like trying to figure this out. I guess I don't really know what's going on in Oakland. They just blew up again. It's like with Lou Trevino out, and I guess Chafin, I think, has the strongest maybe grasp over there in terms of saves, but I don't know that I'm convinced it's just like totally him. I don't know. Things are collapsing in Oakland right now. I don't know. And I was just thinking just in terms of a straight up save, I don't know if I can recommend, say, Carlos in Colorado. I think anytime you're recommending a closer in Colorado, you want to hold your nose and do that. But I think that if you are thinking about picking up a Colorado closer, you already know what you're operating with. And if you actually are desperate for saves and you know what the risks are coming with that, he's one of these pitchers that Colorado pitchers that pitch better at home than away. And they have 3 games at home this week, I believe, but it's against the Giants. And so that's not great. And then they're not back home again until the last 9 games of the season. I think it's September 21st. And they're facing the Dodgers and the Giants. So as I'm saying this out loud, I'm like, I'm not recommending this. I'm like going through this. I'm like, why am I wasting time here? I think if you are considering this, it's because you actually need them. But what this comes
from. Yeah, their leaves can get you 4 mm-hmm. points or more.
It's true. I do think he could. I think it's possible he could get like maybe 3, maybe 4 saves possibly by the end of the season. And if that's beneficial to you, then sign up for that, because there isn't, it is pretty dicey at this point.
Yeah. Like you said, recommending a Colorado closer or pitcher in general is one of those things where you just do it because you have to sometimes, mm-hmm. but it's mm-hmm. not one where if it works out, you're taking a W, like you're not taking a victory lap. You're not happy about it. I'm like, I'm not happy I was right, because mm-hmm. I wasn't really right. Just I had a gun to my head and I had to make a decision. And we keep talking about the blowups in Oakland. I'm just going to read off just yesterday's game between Lou Trevino, Petit, and Sergio Romo.
Oh, yeah, but
only got 3 outs between the 3 of them. Gave up, I'm going to have to do math, 7, 8, 9 earned runs mm-hmm. off of 5 hits. Only collected 2 strikeouts. 3 walks between the 3 of them. So I alluded in my bullpen article on Friday that the back and forth between Romo and Chafin would keep going throughout the weekend. I actually didn't think Romo was going to pitch today at all, because he got the save the other day and put up he threw a bunch of pitches, over 20 at least. So I thought they might just give him the day off. But lo and behold, they threw him with a little bit of rest he had, and it did not work out for the best. So I agree. I think Chafin's probably the guy right now in Oakland, and honestly, probably through the remainder of September, unless Lou Trevino's not doing himself any favors.
No.
All right. Well, we're going to end it off with our last section, our wild card section of recommendations. Guys that you have no idea if they're actually going to provide you with any value, but if they hit, they could hit really hard. And maybe they don't fit into any category that we talked about. Maybe they're just a stash. And at this point of the season, stashes are difficult to predict way more than before. Kevin, is there any wild card out there that you want to throw out there for us?
Yeah, there's one guy that if I have a spot, I may grab him and plug him in there. And he's a wild card. He's already been called up. I'm talking about Romy Gonzalez of the White Sox. He's already been called up, not getting playing time. I think this is insurance, get him some plate appearances in case anything more comes about with Tim Anderson missing more time as they go head into the postseason, or maybe even Moncada missing more time. They want to see if he's ready. But in AAA this season. He has 23 home runs and 22 stolen bases in just 87 games. So this is a guy that if he does start getting everyday playing time, that if being the wild card here, that he could help us in multiple categories.
Yeah, you always, anytime you can find somebody that might be able to add in multiple categories, it's somebody worth taking a look at for sure. I will throw out one truly wild card, I think, and that's Jose Siri over in Houston. Just got the call up there, has not started yet. I think he got called up 2 or 3 days ago, has not started yet. He got his first taste of major league action today, pinch running in the ninth inning for Yordan Alvarez after Alvarez hit a double. Siri started on second base. It did end up scoring on an interesting hit later on in that inning as well. So this is the guy who is bringing it up a notch in AAA this year. 16 home runs, 72 RBIs, 24 stolen bases with only three caught. So that's a pretty good ratio. And if you're looking for, again, he came in and pinch run today. So then the Jared Dyson situation, like Kevin talked about earlier, if he comes in, steals a base, doesn't hurt your batting average, though he hit .318 this year in AAA. So somebody to keep an eye out for sure. He is an actual center fielder, so he could, you know, spell some time in center field. Houston doesn't really have a whole ton of those. I know we talk about Jake Myers all the time, or we have in the last couple of weeks. He could actually play center field, whereas the remainder of the options there are limited. Jose Siri, keep an eye out for him, see what he does this week, and maybe he gets a little bit more playing time down the stretch. Lauren, I'll let you finish us off with any wild card options that you're at least watching, if not putting in a small bid and stashing.
Yeah, I have just a couple of arms, basically, and it's Nate Pearson. He's former top prospect. He had probably a 2020 that he probably doesn't want to remember, but he was supposed to be a part of the rotation, starting rotation this season, but he's dealt with a bunch of injuries. But he's back now. He's played one inning on Friday. He came up as part of the expanded rosters. He wasn't like super great or anything, but I think that means that perhaps it's another kind of buy low opportunity. I think that there's upside there. I think that he could possibly do some damage out of the bullpen during the stretch, and it's a good team to have behind your back. I'm willing to take a flyer just to see what's there. And like what I had said at the top of the show with regards to the Red Sox, I have no idea what the Red Sox are going to look like by the end of the week. And I think that it's not the worst idea to look at some of their depth, whether it is bats or it's arms. And I think two arms that I picked out are Connor Siebold and Cutter Crawford. And they're both on standby for Boston. That team needs depth right now. And I'm willing to look and see, go through the Red Sox depth to see what's there and take flyers on them, not just on these guys, but maybe on some others. It could be worth your time.
Yeah, I like that, especially the Siebold call out as well. We talked about him a little bit last week as well. So I can totally see him being somebody that they call up, if nothing else, as a spot start in Boston as well. Never mind any other future COVID situations that we might see scattered around the next couple of days or weeks before the end of the season. So good call out there. We talked about a ton of players, and I think that these are all really good players to, if at the very least, keep an eye out for this week, if not maybe bid on and stash away in those deeper formats for to see how they work out this week and put them in your lineups for the week prior week after. But I'm going to turn it over to Kevin. We're late in the season, Kevin. What words of wisdom do you have for everybody to live their life by for the final month of the season?
Just a simple reminder. We've talked about it before. It's something everybody knows, but we forget sometimes when we're looking at these categories we can gain in. Don't forget the ones where we have narrow leads, and we got to protect those as well. And for those in head-to-head leagues, good luck. Playoffs are starting.
Yes, yeah. They are. We, of course, don't talk a lot about head-to-head leagues on the show. I heard some other people talking about it either on the Discord or on Twitter. I'm not sure just how fun head-to-head leagues actually are when most of the people in your league. I think I've talked about this on the show a couple of times, but like I love my home dynasty league. I've been playing since 2000 is head-to-head. It's amazing. And when we started the league, it started off with six people. It was a six team league, if you can believe it, but it was six people that lived in my dorm hall that we saw each other every day. And it was awesome. we're up to a 12-team league, and that didn't take too long. It only took about 2 or 3 years. But now it's, we've rotated through a couple of people, but you get to know these people and year in and year out, and you just feel comfortable. And it's like the storylines you can create in your head when you're playing head to head is a lot different than when you're playing in Roto, unless you're playing in multiple leagues in Roto with the same people. You just naturally can create those relationships in a head to head league, I think, that you don't always find in a Roto league. Yeah. Good luck. Good luck to everybody who did make their head to head playoffs. And like I said, we talked about a ton of players. And if there's any other players you're thinking about bidding on or you want us to discuss, let us know. You can email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com. Shoot us a DM over on Twitter @onthewirepod. And of course, you can join PL Plus over at pitcherlist.com, where you get access to the Pitcherlist Discord and the advice and banter of all the members of the Pitcherlist staff who are just waiting to help you win your league. Again, I'm going to thank Lauren Auerbach for joining me for this joining us for this episode. Lauren, you remind everybody at home how they can continue to listen to you and, you know, what you're currently working on so they can keep a lookout for it.
Sure. I co-host two podcasts, one SP Streamer with Michael Simeone, and you can find that at spstreamer.com, in addition to a bunch of great articles from the SP Streamer staff. And then I also co-host a podcast called The Rest of Season Podcast with my buddy Andrew Seifter. You can find that on Apple and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. And we also have a website where you can find our ranks as well as our player notes and some articles. And that's at rosrankings.com. And I also will be starting up this week doing a couple of football articles each week over at FanTrax. I'll be doing the quarterback and tight end, and tight end rankings each week.
I will be personally looking for that because I need more places that I can trust so I don't have to go finding a bunch of different places. So keep an eye on that. Of course, you can also follow Lauren on the Twitter. You can find links to all this stuff in the show description. Lauren is at LK Auerbach on the Twitter machine. And that's going to do it for this week's On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen, and leaving a rating review is always appreciated. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. It's all spelled out. And Kevin is at Hasting Kevin. Make sure to follow at Pitcherlist Pods to get updates on every new episode of every Pitcherlist podcast network show and give them all a listen. We wish you the best of luck in all of your leagues and hope you win all of your bids by exactly $1. Thanks once again to Lauren for joining us. And on behalf of Kevin Hasting, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you goodbye.